Good evening once again and welcome along to the Score programme, our midweek sports show here in Highland, where we delve into what's happening in local sporting circles across the Northwest. I'll be your host, Mark Gallagher, and we have an action-packed show as always lined up. So coming up later this hour, ahead of Donegal Pride this weekend, we speak with openly gay senior GAA player Kevin Penrose of Ahiyarn. We'll hear from Michael McMullen of the Gaelic Life, who's going to look ahead to another busy weekend in the GAA world with some massive games involving Derry and Tyrone. But firstly, we're going to start with League of Ireland Soccer. Finn Harps and Derry City are both away from home in the SSE Airtricity League tomorrow night. In the First Division, Harps face a tough test away to league leaders Cork City at Turner's Cross. Kevin McHugh's side heading south off the back of securing a late draw against Longford Town last time out. Derry City are winless in their last six Premier Division games and they are away to Dundalk tomorrow. The County Stripes have won just four out of their 19 matches so far after two consecutive 0-0 draws against St Pat's and Shelburne. So, to talk all things League of Ireland, I'm joined now on the programme by former Finn Harps manager Anthony Gorman. Anthony, welcome back onto the show and thanks very much for joining us once again.
Hi Mark, thanks for having me.
No problem. So we'll start with Harps, Anthony, and First Division fixtures this season, they don't get any more daunting than a trip to Turner's Cross.
No, I mean you're going to face the league leaders who, you know, they're the biggest team in the league, obviously. And you know, when you look at League of Ireland clubs, they don't come much bigger than Cork City, you know, with the fan base and the potential that they have down there. And I suppose it's a travesty that they're actually in the First Division, but it shows you the strength that we have in the Premier Division at the minute, that a team like Cork finds themselves down in the First Division. But you know, it's a real daunting fixture for Finn Harps this. You know, Cork going to travel to play Cork at any time, but you know, they're sitting, they had a wee blip there a few weeks ago where they lost a couple of games, but they've bounced back with four wins in a row, which gives them a 12-point lead at the top of the table. And, you know, I think it's fair to say at this early stage of the season that the Chase and Pack are playing for second place.
And Cork did have their wee blip. As you say, they were beaten twice in a row after going the whole start of the season unbeaten. 1-4 in a row, three of those were actually away from home. What would you put that down to, those couple of defeats against UCD and Cove? Maybe a wee bit of complacency crept in at the time, was it?
Well, possibly you could say that, all right. But, you know, UCD and Cove are two teams that find themselves in the top four. And traditionally, you know, UCD will always be up around the top of the league anyway. Cove, you know, obviously the derby, it's a derby game, so there's that much more at stake. But possibly a wee bit of complacency, maybe, you know, when they've gone into, you know, such a commanding run of form at the start of the season, and maybe a wee bit of complacency. But certainly, it's from Barry Robson's point of view, he'll be delighted with the response that they've had coming back with them four victories on the bounce.
And one of Harp's best results of the season was actually a 0-0 draw at home to Cork back in April. So that's something Kevin McHugh will be using as a confidence booster heading into this one. The fact that his players have lived with the quality the Leasiders have already this season.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that Finn Harps can take confidence from is the games that all the games they've played. I know that, you know, you look at the league tables and league tables don't lie, and they've only won four games. But there's been very few games where they've lost by more than a goal. I think the only game they've lost by more than a goal has been the Treaty game away from home, where they lost 3-0. You know, they've been in the wrong ends of 2-1s or 1-0s, but, you know, they don't give much away. The problem probably is they don't score enough of goals, and that's probably shown in the fact that they've actually drawn. They've drawn six games already this season, where if you think about another goal in three of them games gives you another 6 points, which puts you right up into the playoff places. But one thing about Harps, they are difficult to break down. And I think, you know, the games that I've watched, you know, you look at, you know, young Sheridan goals, I think he's been really, really good. He's been really impressive. And then obviously Turish at the back, who has been their talisman for the last number of years. He's their leader. But not only that, like, he's the one that pops up with important goals from time to time as well. So while it's a daunting task going to Cork, they can take confidence from the fact they've taken a point of them previously this season, and they don't concede too many goals and they don't get beat by too much. So when there's a goal in it, Mark, you've always got a chance.
For sure. Well, we'll have live updates from that game with Trevor Welsh from the 7:45 kickoff at Turner's Cross tomorrow night. Elsewhere, as you said earlier, Anthony, Cork are 12 points clear, which is fairly remarkable considering UCD were actually right in the mix a couple of weeks ago. I think UCD actually went top for a period. The Students have now lost their last three after being unbeaten for 8 in a row, I think. Willie O'Connor side kind of fallen off the pace a wee bit at the top?
Maybe a wee bit, but you look at the top, it is very top, very tight there with UCD, Wexford and Cove and Bray. Like the top five, there's only 3 points separating them. But again, as I said, and I, you've heard me say this a lot of times, that UCD are always there or thereabouts. And when you're dealing with a young side like that there, you know, there will be time from time to time where they will go on runs where they maybe lose a game and it's followed by another loss. But, you know, Willie O'Connor at this stage, he's a very experienced manager at this level now. He's been there quite a number of years now. So UCD, you'll always see them thereabouts, Mark. But again, you look around there and it's very difficult for any of them to seriously compete with Cork City.
Yeah, well, UCD welcome Athlone to Belfield tomorrow. Elsewhere, Bray are at home to Wexford. Kerry go to Cove in a Munster derby. And Longford Town host Tritty. So Premier Division matters, Anthony. The table stretched out a wee bit in the past couple of weeks. Shamrock Rovers now 5 points ahead at the top of the table, and they're ahead of St Pat's. They meet in Tallaght tomorrow night. That could be a massive game in terms of the way the title picture's sitting.
Yeah, and again, Mark, it could have been so different, you know, with the Bowes Rovers game on Monday night, where with 17 minutes to go, Bowes were actually leading 1-0 and sitting joint top with Rovers, but the game swung in the last 17 minutes with goals from Enda Stevens and McGovern. And then it puts Rovers in that position where they're 5 points clear now of Pats. But it just shows you the strength and depth that Rovers have, you know, where they're getting goals from everywhere. But it was really unfortunate in Bowes because they'd played so well on the night.
So Derry City, two scoreless draws in a row. They head into tomorrow night's game against Dundalk. Before we talk about tomorrow's game, a wee glance at the table here, Anthony. It'll show you that Derry City have won just 4 out of their 19 games. That's the second lowest amount of wins in the league. That is such a poor return after so many games played.
Absolutely. And, you know, we look at the league table and only Waterford have won fewer games and they're sitting at the bottom of the league. It's so frustrating for Derry City, and like we've spoken about this now for the last couple of years about their inconsistency, and you know the narrative over the last couple of years when you're talking about Derry City, especially their home form, has been the pitch or the pitch of the brand. They're always poor. They've gone to Celtic Park, and the complaints are that the pitch is poor, but it's the same for everybody, Mark. And you know, with the amount of investment that has been put into Derry City, they certainly expect better than 4 victories at this stage. Now, in saying that, you know, you look at the losses that the top 5 or 6 teams have had, and Rovers, Pats, Bowes have all lost 4 games. Derry have only lost 5 games, but it's the draw column that's letting them down. They've got 10 draws in there, and it's far too many games to be drawn. If you're seriously going to be thinking about being contenders in the Premier Division, that's far too many games. And, you know, and the one thing about Shamrock Rovers, and we've seen it over the last number of years, and Pats to an extent more recently, they are capable of going and putting 3, 4, 5 ones together on the bounce. And if you can do that in the Premier Division, you're putting yourself right back in the mix and giving yourself an opportunity. And Derry don't seem to be able to do that, Mark.
Yeah, well, tomorrow night is another chance for them to get 3 points and possibly close that gap to the top 4. But Oriel Park is certainly a tough place to go these days as well.
Yeah, I mean, Dundalk have had a brilliant start since coming back into the league. You know, and it's so difficult to go there. And I think credit has to go to them for the performance that they've put in. Like, again, they're another team that's only lost 4 games since coming back into the division. And they put themselves right up into the mix.
Yeah, so two all draws so far this season between the teams. So who knows how that one will go tomorrow night. In the other top flight games tomorrow, Shelburne play Galway United. Sligo Rovers are at home to Bohemians, and it is Drogheda United up against Waterford, as we said earlier. Shamrock Rovers against St Pat's. It's one against two. Anthony, before I let you go, not long now until kickoff at the Aviva, Ireland taking on Qatar, and it looks like Seamus Coleman's going to be around the Ireland fold going forward. It's likely he'll be going to a new club next season, but if you were to look at the bigger picture, Seamus, he's had some career at Everton and hopefully even more to come now in the next chapter of it.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, he's been a fantastic ambassador for not only Donegal, but for Irish football in general. The path that he had, you know, coming from St Catharines through to Sligo Rovers and then getting that move to Everton, he's been an absolute credit, you know, to... especially to Donegal, I suppose, but to Everton Football Club as well, for the time and, you know, that he put into that football club, the length of service, the quality performance he put in over 17 years was phenomenal. And hopefully, you know, there's more to see from Seamus. Like, obviously, his time at Everton is he's cut it short himself. But he certainly feels that he's got more to offer in terms of playing. And I suppose the one thing about him is that the fact that he wants to remain involved with the Irish setup has given him that encouragement to continue playing. And, you know, there's been a few rumours about where his next port of call will be. And, you know, a lot of talk about him possibly ending up at Coventry City because of his link with Frank Lampard. So it would be great to see him remain in the Premier League, but from an Irish point of view, more importantly, it'd be great to see him continue to be involved with the senior international team.
He is involved tonight. He's in the squad for Ireland's game against Qatar, which kicks off very shortly. 7:45 is the start time in Dublin. Anthony Gorman, thank you very much for joining us on The Score once again. Great insight as always, and we'll be talking to you again soon, okay?
Thanks a million, Mark. Talk soon.
Former Harps boss Anthony Gorman. So it is time to take a quick break here on the show. We'll be moving on to Gaelic Games when we come back, so stay tuned. If you're welcome back to the programme, as I said before, it is a massive weekend in Gaelic Games for Derry and Tyrone. The main event is Derry's trip to the Boxhead Athletic Grounds on Saturday evening for a rendezvous with Ulster rivals Armagh in round one of the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship. This could well have been this year's Ulster final had Derry hung on against Monaghan in that semi-final, but that wasn't the case, and as it turned out, Armagh went on to defeat the Farnie men to claim their first Ulster title since 2008. Tyrone's seniors aren't out this weekend, but there's a real opportunity for the up-and-coming generation to get their red hands on even more silverware. Derry and the reigning champions Tyrone go head-to-head on Friday night in the Ulster Minor Football Final in Letterkenny. On Saturday, Tyrone's under-20s could retain their All-Ireland title with a win over Kerry at Croke Park, and there's also a big chance for the senior hurlers, who could win the Nicky Rackard Cup on Saturday, with Stephen McGarry's side facing New York in the decider at GAHQ from 1 o'clock. Derry's hurlers could also claim glory this Saturday. They face off with a highly fancied Kerry team in the Christy Ring Cup final. So it is a busy weekend for Donegal's two northwestern neighbours, and to look ahead to all of the above, the Gaelic Live's Michael McMullen has been speaking with Highland's Oisin Kelly.
Well, Michael, welcome back to the airwaves of Highland. I know you were on Monday night with Brendan Devaney on the DL Debate reviewing all the action from last week, but we've jumped on you again just a few days later to preview what is certainly going to be a very, very busy weekend for the counties of Derry and Tyrone, because they're involved in football underage and it's senior, and there's big hurling deciders coming as well. So there could be titles heading back to the northwest from different quarters come the end of the weekend. So listen, Michael, we'll tear in first maybe to the minor game, which is on tomorrow evening, Friday. It's Derry against Tyrone. They're coming to the O'Donnell Park in Letterkenny, a superb venue to host a provincial underage decider. But both these teams certainly have played some fine football through the course of the championship. What are you expecting tomorrow night, Michael?
I'm probably expecting what the managers have been saying all along, Oisin. I suppose I've been interviewing quite a few of the camps in different capacities over this past few weeks, and they've all said the same thing, that it was wide open. And I suppose the proof in that, because managers sometimes will always say that, but I remember Tyrone manager Jared Donnelly saying to me that I think they beat Cavan comfortably enough at one stage. I can't remember the score line, but I'll never forget his line. He says, I'm not looking forward to seeing that Cavan team again. So as much as there was a margin when it came to the semi-final, Cavan were 11 points up and Tyrone found a way to dig it out. Now, Conan Canavan scored 10 points. It was him who scored the winner against, I forget who they're playing. Danny O'Cooney scored a wonder goal for a Donegal. So it's escaped me right now. But so Canavan scored the winner. So he scored 10 points. Tomás Gallen with a goal right at the end, with then Canavan winning the game. So Tyrone have come through the tight side of it as well. Now, from Derry's point of view, they were lucky enough to beat Donegal. They got a winner right at the end. So as you say, at all, as I says, it points to a tight one, and like they were level five times in that game. So Derry have been in a tight squeeze as well. I've only saw them play twice, Oisin, and both games were decided right at the end. Albeit they were comfortable enough against Down and were left to hang on. So it does point to a tight one. You've also the factor of it's underage and the uncertainty of it. And the one thing Kieran Glacken did say to me, the Derry manager, is that as much as O'Donnell Park is a really good venue and all of that, Friday at 7 o'clock in the middle of exam season is definitely tricky, but that's by the by.
Yeah, well, we're expecting another tough game tomorrow at the O'Donnell Park. That one starts 7:15. Derry against Tyrone. We will, of course, have reaction from that game on our website, highlandradio.com. We'll stick with the football because there's another under-20 All-Ireland final for Tyrone coming up on Saturday evening as well. And once again, they go against Kerry. Now, Tyrone came through Ulster. They stuttered through Ulster, Eamon. They lost two games and they still won the provincial. And now they find themselves back in an All-Ireland final, going for three All-Ireland titles in a row. With one more hurdle to go, how big a task is that for Paul Devlin and his Tyrone Chargers?
Yeah, well, I suppose Kerry are in that final, and the two counties, Oisin, have built up an unbelievable rivalry over the years at all levels. But like this Tyrone team, I've saw them quite a bit now, to be honest, and like they were 2 points down against Derry in a quarter final and found a way to win. Their captain, Conor Devlin, he's just a real driving force. 2 points up, 2 points down. He just keeps playing. And they ended up getting a winning goal that night. And it was probably quite similar up in Conwy. I know yourself and Brendan Kilcoyne were commentating that night. It was quite similar. So not only have they got grit, they've got some amount of talent as well, as the Ulster final proved, because they threw off the shackles and won. And as Tyrone teams do, they end up doing well in the All-Ireland semi-final. Sometimes where they battle to get out of Ulster, they always seem to. It was the same in the Hogan Cup with some of their teams as well. They've pushed on. So they seem to have the best of both worlds. They're going for a ninth All-Ireland under-20 title. I think it's Cork and Kerry possibly the head of them, I think. But like a ninth title is some going. And before a ball was kicked in Ulster, I have to admit, I thought Donegal were the team to beat, because I suppose, as you well know, there's so many players that were linked in with Jim's senior squad, but Tyrone are still there. And the one thing that I did pick out of their build-up this week, Oisin, I think it was their coach, Conor O'Donnell, says that it's really sweet because they weren't expected to even get to an Ulster final. And here they are. You wouldn't bet against them winning an All-Ireland, because they will firmly believe that they can win, and rightly so.
Yeah, they have a certain knack of self-belief within the group to get them through games, and they've only got one more to go. That game is at Croke Park and it starts at 5 o'clock on Saturday evening. We'll have a few updates from that game as well on Saturday. Just staying with the football, there is of course the latest round of games in the All-Ireland series taking place, the latest series of matches rather in round one. Involved of those is your own county, Derry. Michael, they are going to the Athletic Grounds to take on the newly crowned Ulster champions, Armagh. It showed in recent years, I'll use Donegal as an example, they won Ulster the first game of the All-Ireland, they lost to Tyrone in Ballybofey. From a Derry point of view, can they upset the Ulster champions in the first game in the All-Ireland on Saturday evening and get themselves into the winners' group? Or would you be happy enough with them going to round 2B?
We definitely want to get back to winning ways, Oisin. They can do it, but they're definitely up against it. And the other game I would reference there too with Donegal. They went to Cork a week after having a really good performance against Tyrone. So it definitely is difficult to keep, how would you say it, to keep that sort of spark going. But the one thing I would say about Derry is they've been firmly in the long grass, like so much so that they didn't even, there wasn't even no media chat after the fight, after they lost to Monaghan. So they are firmly in the long grass. I know Oran Lynch has played two club games for Máire Fils since, but I don't see him getting back into the lineup because it's just a massive step into inter-county level. On a completely different tangent, I was doing my preview for Gaelic Life. I called it consistency versus inconsistency, and it nearly comes down to the management. In the 12 years Kieran McGeaney has managed Armagh, Derry have had 7 managers. Like that's an 8 if you count that Kieran Mina was sort of caretaker manager for 2 games. So even that in itself leads you to show that the consistency Armagh have had, and as your own county Oisín knows too well, like those Ulster finals were like literally the bounce of a ball. So they won't get too high, they won't get too low. So that's a test for Derry. And I suppose the positive side, Oisín, for Derry is that for long, long spells of that Monaghan game, and even whenever I watched it back, you sort of thought Derry were going to win it, even though you knew they didn't, because they're playing so well. But it was the 2-pointers that undone things. And I was doing a wee bit of research for the preview, and like Armagh and Derry have the same amount of 2-pointers in league and championship, 21. So it's not as if there's a massive difference. I think it's 13 and 14 goals. I'm not sure who's got which. Whenever you put that into context, Meath have 38 2-pointers. But it tells you that Armagh and Derry are quite similar in how they approach it. I just feel at the moment that Armagh are a more consistent and polished version of that. Whereas Derry in a couple of games they've nearly looked to make the extra pass and it's been cut out, probably typified by their game down in Louth against Louth down in RD, where they just kept trying to open up Louth. Whereas if you go to Armagh, they've that real play where they load one side and you've got somebody like Oisín O'Neill who's a 2-point threat, and all of a sudden you've Connolly on the other side who's got sheer pace. So for Derry to go into that winner's pot that you're asking me about there, they have to do two things. They have to stop Blaine Hughes getting, you know, close to 100% on his kick-out success. And they have to find a way to tie down Oisín Connolly, which a lot of teams are struggling with at the moment. If they do both those things, they'll definitely be in with a chance. But it'll take too long in this chat to go into it. But Derry's big long-term debate, and I've been saying it for years and years and years, is depth. You know, when Monaghan were bringing men off the bench, it made a difference. Derry didn't have that, so that's for further on down the road. But this weekend, it's possible Derry could do it, but it's hard to look past Armagh based on the consistency. But look, you were in Killarney last week yourself. You see how things can change. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll have to see. We're all looking forward. Okay, Michael, into the final piece. We're talking hurling matches, 2 games in particular. Tyrone in the Nicky Rackard final, Derry in the Christie Ring. Your own county, Derry, involved here in a competition that they've struggled to get their hands on silverware and make the jump out of that level. They've lost 4 in the last 5 years. They've lost the last 3 finals in a row. What is it going to take for Derry to overcome Kerry in this decider and be Christie Ring champions? There's a bit of history in recent years for Derry. How do they overcome that mindset, and how much do they use the game in the group stage where they beat Kerry in Owen Beg to seal their place in the final? It's a huge game for the Derry hurlers.
It's a big game, Oisín. It's simply going to need their best performance of the season. It's just as simple as that. They have, like, Cormac O'Doherty is going to play in his 5th Christie Ring final, which is an amazing level of consistency for him. But they went to the last year's final and they didn't perform against London, and they were left home, going home empty-handed. They were beaten by Kerry this year in the first game of the league by 26 points. But whenever they met in the group stages, Kerry had already booked their place in the final, you know, and Derry needed Donegal to beat Meath that same day, you know, to do them a favour. But as it turns out, then they beat Kerry. Kerry, I think, had only made 2 changes from the team before. So as much as they were pretty close to full strength, anything really to play for, whereas Derry needed to win. And that's going to be difficult to replicate that this weekend. Do you know, and I think I was asking some of the lads when I was doing the build-up for it, Oisín. Obviously, they want to take the cup home. That goes without saying. But I was asking the question, what do you need to do? And they just kept using this word performance. Kerry are favourites, and rightly so. They were probably favourites before a ball was struck in this competition. And it was probably going to come down to Derry or Meath to see who would be in the final, and it has panned out that way. But I'll reiterate it, it's just going to need a massive performance, because that's the thing that will disappoint the most over this past few seasons. When they went to the final, they simply haven't performed. I do feel that they didn't get fair play from the officials last year in the final, but at the same time, and as a couple of players admitted themselves, they didn't do themselves any favours. So could be another disappointing day at Croke Park unless they go and deliver a big performance, and that's what they're going to have to find. It's as simple as that, because they are underdogs, but who knows, possibly this could be the year where they do the business. Hopefully they do, because I would have to say that Johnny McGarvey, the manager, has poured everything he has into this. Managing a Derry hurling team is not a fashionable place. It's not like football where you're in the shop window. They have a small fan base, and they've given it everything they can, but it's going to need the biggest one yet, and Kerry will know that.
That Derry-Kerry game is part of a triple header at Croke Park, along with the under-20 final. Before that at 3, it's Derry and Kerry, and then the opening game at 1 o'clock. New York against Tyrone. The Nicky Rackard Cup decider. Tyrone looking to get into the Christy Ring competition with victory here. New York are the opposition. Tyrone certainly the form team, winning 5 from 5. And would you expect Tyrone to continue in that vein of form on the decider, Michael?
Yeah, well, 21 goals in 5 games would say an awful lot about what they bring. Now, in the league, they finished mid-table, but they lost to like Donegal, who are a quality side. I think they had a draw with Roscommon, so that's where they are. They're fairly well tested. This is a step into the unknown for Tyrone. Like, they've won the title before. They've won the Laurie Maher division below them as well. So they've got form, and they're improving. And I suppose Aero Club has had a really good season. So it's definitely a very winnable game. The one thing I would like to quickly say, I think it's very, very unfair, the New York situation, because for listeners, if you're not aware, they only come in at the semi-final stage, and who knows what they could have, like they did the same last year in the Laurie Maher de Cavan. So I think that's very, very unfair on a Tyrone team that has slogged away all year. But this is it's probably a wee bit like Derry, where they're going to need a really big performance, and hopefully they can do the job, because they've been doing it all year. It's that unknown factor, and I know that New York have players like Johnny Glynn. I know he played for them last year. You know, real quality player from Galway. So they will be a good side. They'll be a good side, and Tyrone will have it all to do to win.
Okay, Michael, we look forward to a lot of quality action on both the football and hurling front for Derry and Tyrone this weekend. Thanks for joining us, and enjoy the action coming up over the next few days.
No bother. Thanks.
There you go. That is the Gaelic Life's Michael McMullen in conversation with our own Oisín Kelly. That big game this Saturday evening between Armagh and Derry throws in at 7:15 at the Boxford Athletic Grounds. Elsewhere in the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship, Round 1 Sunday sees Dublin and Louth go head-to-head at Croke Park from 2:30, while Clonus hosts a clash of Monaghan and Mayo. That game gets underway from 4 o'clock. Locally, it's a massive weekend for the Kilcare Club as they host the All-Ireland Comórtaspel in the Gaeltacht finals in Towney. There are 6 Donegal clubs involved. Kilcare and Gidore are in the senior men's competition, while Fannad Gaels are in the junior men's. Termon are the senior women's representatives. Neave Columba take part in the intermediate competition, and the Kilcare ladies will play in the junior section. That action gets up and running tomorrow night, with Gidore playing Kiltane of County Mayo in the senior men's competition at 7:30 down in Towney. There are a handful of games across the all-county leagues here in Donegal this weekend. The only Division 1 fixture, though, will see Éire Ballyhale Ali Shannon make the short trip to take on Four Masters tomorrow night. That game has a 7:30 throw-in at Tyrconnell Park. Well, Omagh St Enda's will celebrate the career of Taddy Turbitt by naming the grandstand at O'Neill's Healy Park after the legendary Tyrone goalkeeper this Saturday. Turbitt's career panned across three decades and he gave a lifetime of dedication to the Omagh club. Taddy's long list of achievements include six Tyrone Senior Football Championship titles with Omagh St Enda's and two Ulster Senior Football Championship titles with his county. It's time to take another quick break and we'll be back with the final part of the show in just a moment. Welcome back to the final part of tonight's Score programme. Conversations around inclusion and identity in sport have become more open in recent years, but for many sports people, especially those involved in Gaelic games, the journey to find their place has not been an easy path. Tyrone man Kevin Penrose is one of only a small number of openly gay male senior Gaelic footballers in Ireland. Speaking to Highlands' Oisin Kelly, Kevin has been reflecting on his journey to coming out, the dressing room gay slurs that affected him growing up in the sport, and the support he received from friends and his teammates at Ahí Éireann St Davog's when he learned to fully embrace who he is.
Kevin, you're welcome to the studio. How's your life?
All good, all good.
Thanks for coming
in. No problem, thanks for having me.
Listen, Kevin, first of all, tell us about your life in the world of Gaelic games.
So, I'm from Tyrone, across the border there, Ahí Éireann Castledeirg area. Mistaken for a Donegal man every now and then from the accents. But yeah, I am openly gay Gaelic footballer. Came out coming up five years ago now. And spent a lot of my life running away, I guess, from who I actually was, you know, in sexuality and didn't really want to accept it. And then took a lot of time out of football because it just affected my career. I just thought I wasn't a good footballer, you know, like as of my family, growing up all the way up to minors, under-21s, everything, like it had the talent, but just got to a point then where every time I was going to football, it was in the back of my head where, okay, something's not clicking here. But I just blamed, okay, I've just lost the talent, you know, and then not knowing then that it was actually more my mental health and my sexuality was really taking its toll. And so decided that me taking a step out of that Gaelic world, because that's how I felt. I associated the sport with how I was feeling, not necessarily my sexuality, and just started not running away, but just started not facing it. And then done a bit of traveling, getting out of Ireland, I guess, you know, and found out very quickly that it follows you, your baggage, you know, and then eventually then decided to face it 4 years ago, 28. Yeah, just turned 28, so it was. And yeah, decided to come out then. And yeah, the whole thing just flipping itself then, you know, like the weight had just lifted. Yeah. And then coming back into the sport then, it wasn't something I originally planned to do. I was coming back to Ireland because I just thought, right, something's calling me back now, I guess, you know. And then eventually got back into the sport and yeah, haven't looked back since, you know.
At that time when you pulled away from the Gaelic games world, what was your take on the stigma around being a gay man trying to play Gaelic football?
Well, just a different time compared to like today, you know, like growing up you do hear in the changing rooms especially, you hear just the, you have to have this persona of masculinity, you have to be strong, you have to be, you can't show any weakness, you can't share about anything with your feelings, you know. And unfortunately, a lot of the stigma around it was gay slurs would be thrown around the change rooms as banter per se. But for me, as time went on, once these things were said to someone else, not even towards me, once I sort of feel, oh, I actually got a little bit offended by that, I guess, you know, but I can't say nothing to draw attention to me. And then it was just sort of that there shift, I guess, you know, where I was like, okay, this environment now is not what it used to be. And I guess a lot of lads like growing up with the GA, like that's our identity, that's all we know, you know. And to sort of lose that as a player, I just didn't really know where I fitted in. And that's why I just decided to take a step back and thinking that would...
How difficult was that at the time for you?
I think at the time it wasn't too bad initially, just because I thought the enjoyment for me wasn't in it anymore within the sport. And again, I just thought, okay, it's a lot harder to break into senior football, reserve football. You just like any other lad, you have to move up in the ranks, you know, and you do see a lot of people drop off at that stage, you know, within the sport. And I just thought, okay, is this my sign to drop off? And I did go away to university in Liverpool as well. Not intentionally going to play football over there, but just drop into the football team as well. But it's sort of, okay, here's my opportunity to get away here now and sort of live a little. And then once I joined the Gaelic team over there, it's fallen back into that mood and routine again. And again, it was sort of one of those things, you're one foot in, one foot out, and you don't really know where you stand. And the same thing over there as well, wasn't getting game time with the university team either. So I was like, okay, maybe I am just an awful footballer now. Like, the talents has sort of left me. And it's just one of them things, okay, association with the sport is how I felt at that time. And I was miserable without showing it, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. And once I did, I could step away from the sport then, it was sort of my expectations. Okay, everything's going to be happy and good again, you know, but turned out that it wasn't the sport after all.
And you had your struggles to find yourself, and you did, and
yeah,
you accepted that you were a gay man, and you told your family, and they were very much warm into it, mm-hmm. and accepting it as well. But then you had to go tell your teammates. I heard the word fear used mm-hmm. previously.
Yeah.
What was there a fear there for you? Because if you go into the changing room, tell your teammates, there's matches, there's abuse from crowds, you're a content creator, mm-hmm. you all know all about how social media works, how it affects your family, how is it going to affect the other players? So there's all these scenarios that become part of this fear. What was that fear like for you?
100%. Like, I think for me at the time, it was just, okay, if I get my family told, that's the main thing. At this stage, I wasn't really talking to the football lads as much, I guess, you know, so I didn't see them as much. And I'd been out of the sport maybe a couple of years at this point. And once I told my family, I was like, okay, you can tell whoever you want now. It's as long as you know that's the main thing. And I thought, no, actually, I'll start telling, extend the family, like the cousins and all that, their crack. And then eventually, and as being a content creator, I was like, right, I might as well just address this online and just get it out of the way one. And one big go, otherwise I'll be coming out every other day sort of thing, you know, to everyone, every conversation. And then once I came back to Ireland, obviously the football lads had seen the post and everything anyway, you know, so you do get the messages and what from them of support, and then you meet up for them with coffee, and it's normal, you know. Yeah. And the conversation very quickly turned to, right, Kevin, when are you coming back to football now, sort of thing, you know. So those were the first sort of signs that I saw, okay, these lads were actually grand and supportive of this. But it was always, like he says, you have the first training session going back in, the first time stepping into the changing rooms, first match back against other teams. How is everyone else going to react to this, you know? But again, it's all in your heads. You're just sort of thinking, you're just paranoid, yeah. Even though it's grand, you know? And thankfully, like, nothing has been an issue on or off the pitch.
What about the slurs that you talked about and the way it's thrown around the changing room?
Haven't heard them.
Did that all change as well once everybody knew?
Yeah, 100%. But I don't think that's because of me, I guess, you know. I think that's just over time how society is in general, across the board and all sports, I guess, you know. And I guess growing up, people just weren't educated. We just didn't know any different, I guess, you know. And again, once you're a teenager in the changing rooms and everything, you're thinking, okay, I need to stand out here. I need to be seen as the big lad or the best in the room sort of thing, you know. And again, it was just a bit of ignorance growing up. And I guess as society changes and the years went on, there was a shift in it. I'm not saying it's perfect now today, but
the misconceptions aren't as great as what used to be before. And listen, if there's young men listening to this, so there is, and they're at a stage where, again, mm-hmm. the fear is actually worse of the scenario and the situation is when you actually do tell your teammates. But it's still a major, major hurdle to get over, Kevin.
That's it. You know, like for me, I was thinking, okay, again, the GAA was everything I knew, grew up with. That was my identity. And without it, who is Kevin sort of thing, you know? Like I thought my friends are going to, I'm going to lose them, going to lose the sport itself, going to lose my family, you know, my closest friends. And you just think of every negative that's going to happen, but you don't really think of the positive that's going to come from it. And thinking back to younger Kevin now and that changed from hearing those sort of slurs or scenarios, like compared to today, like I do have the confidence now to call it out in a sense, you know. And again, people just didn't know, they don't know that they're doing any wrong. And until they're told, like, oh, actually, I didn't mean that in that way. Sorry, I apologize. And they accept it, you know. So yeah, I think just being more aware of it now and calling it out and just make them more comfortable for anyone in the scenario, if you're out or not out of the closet, I guess, you know, in that situation. It just shows that words have meanings and you don't know who's being affected by them.
We're looking at statistics here now. They're not actual figures, but you could have about 250,000 people, men, involved with the Gaelic Football Association. And if you were to go by what society suggests with research, 3 to 7% of men identify as gay or bisexual, which would have a figure of between 8,000 and 20,000 gay men possibly involved in Gaelic football. That's a huge,
massive.
It's a huge number.
Yeah.
But when you hear the stories about players that have come out, there hasn't been too much of it, Kevin.
No.
Let's be honest about it. Donal Cusack with the referee David Goff.
Yeah.
The likes of yourself, Mark Shields,
yeah,
and Armagh.
Yeah.
And these are the standout people. But other than that, it's really unheard of.
Yeah.
So how do you go about, or how does society, how does the GAA now go about to encourage a gay man to come out and be part of the association as who he is?
Well, I guess just sharing our stories, you know, like I'm happy to talk about my own experience over and over, you know, and I've done panel talks in the past couple of years since coming out, and I guess there has been a lot of opportunities down that road to talk about it a lot more. But I guess it's more getting your story out and showing that people it is okay. Like, you know, from my own experience, that's once I did come out, the amount of messages I would have gotten from lads in similar positions who have either moved away from Ireland, quit the sport altogether, and have come out abroad, I guess, you know, or someone who's in rural Ireland and they're in the same position as me but are too afraid to come out, you know. It's just hearing their stories, you're thinking, oh, this actually is more common than people think. And I guess just sharing the stories and getting the word out there a lot more is the only way to do it, you know. And you can't force anyone to come out of the closet. I can only speak from my own experience, I guess, you know. But to show from my own experience, my own club, and how they've accepted me and made my environment so much easier to walk into. If one club can do it, why can't every other club do it, you know? And it's not necessarily rolling out the red flag or pride flags on the gat there. It's just being open and honest and, I guess, open for conversation. And even if it's someone whose mental health problems, for example, or struggling with anything else in their life, open in the conversations for anything, I guess, you know, and just keeping those areas open for them to share and just feel like, okay, I'm not in this alone and someone actually cares about me to actually offload this. And it does make a difference, though, talking about it.
And get to a stage and get to a point where you want to get back to playing and loving, yeah, a sport that you that you grew up with.
This is it, you know, and like a lot of people, like growing up, you're like, okay, go to training, go to the matches. This is your escape from reality, I guess, you know, and that's where it should be, having the crack and letting loose a bit, you know. And for me, it wasn't that. It sort of flipped, you know. But yeah, getting back to that stage where it's like, okay, I'm here to play football and that's the main reason why I'm here. You know, I'm not looking over my shoulder thinking, okay, this lad knows something about me. I don't even understand myself, you know.
To keep it on the trajectory of acceptance, mm-hmm, is there maybe more prominent inter-county footballers needed to the fore in this to back what's going on for a gay man? Now, these are straight men,
yeah,
so they are. But for them to voice the support for a gay man in the GAA, is that the next stage, is it, do you think?
I think it's part of it, having your allies on your side and support and showing up for you whenever the times are hard, yeah, for example. Like, there's been many pride talks over the past couple of years I've done where anyone's welcome to them and people want to show up and come to it. But I remember one last year, it was in Dublin for just a pride brunch, and it was actually Conor Myler who was hosting it, yeah, and he's a great ally, great man to have on side, you know. It was me, him, and Mark Shields who were on the panel, and everyone else in the room was all women, you know. Like, there's no, I think there's maybe one or two straight men in that room, you know, and those are the rooms that you need the men in there as well to show their support, so even just to hear the stories and whatnot. But I think a lot of it comes down to fear again, whereas that perception of, okay, I'm a straight man now, is my sexuality going to be assumed by association? Am I going to be seen as gay if I show up to these events, you know? Yeah. And that's just one thing that stood out, and I think it's really important that it's to let people know it's okay to come to these events, and that's how you show your support and get the word out there.
As seen from a senior inter-county perspective, okay, we're talking about a very, very prominent player,
mm-hmm,
and he comes out. In society today, for a person like that to do that, is it worth it?
It's difficult, you know, because, yeah, they're already up there to the masses of people. Like, they're already scrutinized probably on their career and then anything else to do outside of that, you know, to have that other element of sexuality on top less. Like, it's hard for anyone to get their head around that, I guess, you know. I know for myself how hard it was for me. I can only imagine how hard it would be for an inter-county player to face that as well. But I can see the flip side of it and the good that can come from it. And I would like to think that the GAA is a community that is so welcoming and it's a place for everyone where they wouldn't be scrutinised on their sexuality. But yeah, I can see both sides of it, you know, like it would be amazing. And just to show the masses that it's okay and you can be a top player in your sport. Doesn't matter what your sexuality is, you know. But I can see the weights and the pressure that comes along with that as well.
How's the football going at the minute for you?
It's not too bad at the minute. We're waiting for the league to start now at the minute, so we're still training a few friendlies, you know. So that's my fourth year back now, so I don't... Still ticking over, yes.
Are you enjoying your football now?
Oh, yeah.
Better than you've ever done before?
100%. You know, like previously before, like I wasn't even making the senior team, like maybe 5 minutes here or there, compared to like once I came back this year, I was like, right, I'm actually really focused now, put in the hard work. I got my starting position, still have my starting position, and that sort of, I owe it to my younger self to give my time now to the sport and really enjoy it and really get the most out of it. Compared to years ago where I was like, okay, this isn't for me anymore. But yeah, enjoying it. Just waiting now for the league to start and get back into it for another year.
Just finally then, Kevin, what's the best bit of advice you can give to somebody who's maybe listening to this piece today that is a gay man in the Northwest and is struggling, loves playing Gaelic football, but obviously has this massive hurdle to overcome and how it's going to be accepted? First of all, how it's perceived, and then how is it going to be accepted within the group that he is in? So if they were to come to you, what's the best bit of advice you can give somebody now?
I guess just maybe two pieces of advice. The first one being don't look at it as a negative thing. Think of the positives that could come from it. I guess, yes, it will be hard, but think of all the goodness that can come from it as well. And I guess having someone to talk to, in a sense, because I thought I was the only gay person in the world, never mind in Ahear and in Tyrone, you know. So yeah, even just having someone to offload, not even necessarily say that you're struggling with your sexuality, but just how you're feeling and how the sport's making you feel, and then open up different avenues and how we can sort of combat this and help you get even further help or someone else to talk to, or get the right person to talk to, you know. And I guess now, even just having social media, for example, compared to 10, 12 years ago, there was just newspapers and everything. Like, you didn't have the access to information that we do have today. And just showing that there are other people out there and that you're not alone, even just reaching out that their way as well, you know, it does make a big difference compared to going through it by yourself.
Kevin, we appreciate you coming on today.
No problem.
And the very best luck with the season ahead.
Thank you.
Ahi Aaron's on the up. Is there a championship looming, is there?
Oh, hope so, you know.
Good man. Listen, Kevin, we really do appreciate you coming on. Best luck with the football and the best of luck with your continued journey.
Cheers.
As well, because I know you know that you're very, very supportive to others who you are. So
thank you.
Ahi Aaron's Kevin Penrose speaking with Oisin Kelly. That full interview will be available online very, very shortly. Well, time is almost up on the show, but let's have a look at what else is happening before we leave you. The official launch of the 2026 Donegal International Rally will take place tomorrow evening from 7 at the Donegal Public Services Office on the Needlehy Blaney Road in Letterkenny. Organisers will unveil the rally and the much awaited entry list, which we already know will include the likes of Chris Meek and Josh McErlane. On the road this week, the Circuit of Munster Rally will be based out in Limerick this Sunday in round 5 of the National Rally Championship. And finally for tonight, it's a North West Senior Cup weekend in the cricket. Among the games, Letterkenny play Coleraine, Strabane face Ballyspellin, and St Johnson play Eglinton. That's all for tonight. If you missed any of the show and want to have a listen back, you'll be able to find the full episode over on the playback section of our website at highlandradio.com, or of course now also over on the Radio Player app. I've been your host, Mark Gallagher. Thank you very much for listening in. Jimmy Stafford's up next just after the 8 o'clock news. Have a great evening, enjoy the sport of the weekend, and I will be talking to you all again very soon. Take care.